I will call the remote hearing of the Environment and Natural Resources Finance and Policy Committee to order. Today is June 23rd, 2021. This meeting is held in accordance with Rule 10.01, which was passed and allows for remote hearings. All remote hearings are recorded and live streamed by House Public Information. The clerk will take attendance by roll.
Chair Hansen is present. Wasilewicz.
Wasilewicz present.
Heinzelman. Heinzelman.
Heinzelman present.
Akam.
Akam present.
Ackland.
Ackland present.
Backer. Backer.
Backer present.
Becker Finn. Becker Finn. Ecklin.
Present.
Fisher. Fisher. Green.
Present.
Igo.
Present.
Jordan.
Present.
Keeler.
Present.
Lee.
Lee present.
Lippert.
Present.
Lewick.
Present.
Morrison.
Morrison present.
Nelson.
Nelson present.
Tice.
Tice present.
Just go back quick. Becker Finn. Becker Finn. Fisher. Fisher. And a quorum is present.
Quorum is present. Members, we have a House floor session at 10 a.m., so we will adjourn at approximately 9:50 a.m. We are going to have a nonpartisan staff walk through House File 5. Members, this is the product of weeks of very, very difficult negotiations. I think it is the best we could do. There are a number of items in here that have that provide funding for a number of our priorities of this committee. There is money for chronic wasting disease, aquatic invasive species, emerald ash borer, and PFAS. So those acronyms we've talked about a lot, and we're going to hear more about them and how they're approached as the staff walk through the bill. I want to make sure that we have time for questions, so I want to make sure we get through the walkthrough at least by 9:15. So I'm asking if we hold the questions until after the staff have gone through the spreadsheet and the bills. So with that, we have Brad Hagemeyer, House Fiscal Analysis, and Janelle Taylor to walk through the bill.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. I'm going to share my screen so we can see the document I'm working on. Okay, if everyone can see that spreadsheet, there's four spreadsheets that are posted right now. There's a change item one, a detailed one, and then a 2020 and Environment and Natural Resources Trust Fund and a 2021 Environment and Natural Resources Trust Fund spreadsheets. I'm going to work from the change item sheet that's posted that I have showing right here. In order to make things a little easier to see, I have a one where I hid some more columns. It's the same spreadsheet, just has the working group agreement here. That's what I'll be working from. The first set of columns right here is the current biennium that we're going through. Then you can see the change from the base, the change from the governor's revised recommendations, the change from the Senate, the change from the House. So this would be if you're looking for anything that compared to what passed the House previously. And then here's the same things for the tails biennium, fiscal years 24 and 25. Starting on the Pollution Control Agency on line three, the House had a climate adaptation resiliency program. Through the process, it kind of became focused on local government water infrastructure grants. So that was funded at just under $2 million for the biennium and then $500,000 for the tails. On line five, the operating adjustment was included at $152,000. On line six, there's legal costs. It's appropriated to DNR, but it can be transferred to the Pollution Control Agency. So the appropriation is $3 million and up to $2 million may be transferred to Pollution Control Agency. The next ones are changes from the House. You'll see the on line 8 was the rulemaking requirements the House had that was not included in this bill. On line 9, the cumulative impacts implementation was not included in this bill. On line 10, there's a green tier report for $128,000. On line 11, there's a PFAS source evaluation. The House had this out of the Environment Fund previously, but it's out of the general fund now for $600,000. On line 12, there's St. Louis River Mercury TMDL for $350,000. Again, the House had this as an environmental fund, but it's now out of the general fund. And then on line 13, there was a transfer to Melcat in the Tails. I'll show it later in the spreadsheet. There is still a transfer, but it's now ongoing. And then lines 14, 15, 16, and 17 were Senate projects going into this that were not included. On line, that would be the general fund. In total, there's 3.228 million new general fund money for the Pollution Control Agency. Starting on line 22 is the environmental fund. There are three PFAS projects that were in the bill if the House had that were not included in House File 5 now. Line 25, there's new equipment for compliance and enforcement in environmental justice areas for $184,000 that was included. As I mentioned, on line 27, the St. Louis River Mercury, on line 26, there was also some compliance and enforcement related to the new equipment that was not included. On line 27, there's a St. Louis River Mercury TMDL. The House had this as environmental fund. It is now a general fund up above. On line 29 is the air appropriation increase that was carried in everyone's bill. On line 30, 31, 32, 33, 34, and 35, these are all Senate provisions out of the environmental fund that were not included in this bill. On line 35, sorry, I think I mentioned that one already, but line 35 was a increase to the SCORE grants, so it would be $700,000 additional per year out of the environmental fund. Line 36 and 37 are a Senate change that makes a kind of technical from a statutory appropriation to a direct appropriation for the Metro Landfill abatement and grants. There's on line 38, an environmental fund transfer to the remediation fund. There's a base amount of $22 million per year. The PCA requested additional money, so there's $3 million additional being transferred into the remediation fund. On line 39 is the water program appropriation increase the House had carried for just over $3 million. And then on line 40, there's the PFAS and food packaging use regulated. This was a provision the House had. It's just delayed 1 year in the new bill. Scroll down here. And then starting on line 42, there is a different set of provision related to PFAS that was also not included. And then 43 was the House had water quality standards that was not included. On line 44, there's a carpet stewardship report that was not included. On line 45, there's seed disposal rulemaking that was not included in this bill. On line 46, there's a community liaison for air permitting the House had that was not included. Line 47, the non-expiring air permit requirements was not included. And then line 48, the House had public hearing requirements for alleged violations that was also not included. Going on to the next page, there is out of the remediation fund, there's a couple of changes there. Records management support for contaminated sites. It reduces some of the statutory appropriation, makes it direct. And same with the Superfund program capacity staffing increase. These were governor's proposals the House had carried and are included in this bill. And then line 55 and 56 are the Petra Fund sunset date repeal. The repeal is actually carried in a different bill, but about half the spending comes in here. So this is kind of base spending, but it continues it going forward by repealing the sunset. And then again, the on line 57 would be that environmental fund transfer to the remediation fund. This is showing the other side of it coming into the remediation fund. On line 60, the House had carried the Landfill Responsibility Act. That was the governor's proposal that is not included in this bill. Starting on line 62, you'll see a bunch of things related to the closed landfill investment fund. This one's been debated for a few years. What is ended up here is there's a four-year sunset on the program. There's a statutory appropriation of $4.5 million per year for those 4 years. And then there's an emergency statutory appropriation of $9 million in the first year of the biennium, but it can be used for either year of the biennium. And again, both of those sunset in 4 years, so the legislature can change that in the future if they'd like, or continue it in that same way if they like it. And then the only revenue change received for the Pollution Control Agency was an air appropriation increase, which are required under federal law. In total, the Pollution Control Agency from all funds and sources is $544 million. Going on to line 95 is the Natural Resources Department. On line 97 is the legal cost that I mentioned of $3 million. On line 98 is accelerated tree planting to capture carbon. It's included in the bill at $2.5 million, which is just slightly less than the House had. On line 99, there's $300,000 for public safety response. On line 100 is the operating adjustment for the Natural Resources Department. It's just under $4 million in the current biennium and then $5 million in the tails. On lines 100, 102, 103, and 104, those are Senate provisions that were not included. Line same with 105 through 108 were, again, Senate provisions that were not included in the bill. On line 109, you'll see aquatic invasive species prevention grants. There's one time $850,000 from the general fund for this purpose. On line 110, the U of M, the AIS Research Center, will receive a grant of $500,000 per year for their research. On line 111 is the Hoffman Apiaries in Waseca County. It's a one-time appropriation of $225,000. On line 112 is a state park increase. There are no fee increases for state parks in this bill, but the bill does provide $1 million in general fund money in both fiscal years 22 and 23. On line 113 is protect digital assets from cyber attack. There's a one-time $400,000 appropriation for this purpose. On line 114 is addressing chronic wasting disease. There's a couple of parts to this here. There's $3.5 million for the work basically for the wild herd and the testing that the agency does related to that. On line 115, the House had adopted dumpster provision. There are no carve-outs for adopted dumpster in the bill. On line 116 is farm survey day oversight transition. Again, this would be $3.5 million in the current biennium and then $4.5 million in the tail. And this would be for co-management authority that is now included in the bill for DNR and Board of Animal Health. On line 117 is a grant to Red Lake Nation for AIS response of $300,000. On line 118, there's timber permit extensions at a smaller amount than the House had, but they are still included in the bill. On 119 is shade tree grants to cities to address EAB and climate change. This would be receiving $2.4 million in the current biennium and $800,000 in the tails. On line 120, the House, a couple provisions the House had that are not included would be the water use permit public meetings, the groundwater use sustainability research, and then law enforcement salary increases. The House included this in the bill in various spots. It is still in this agreement in House File 5. It's just dealt with in a different article of the bill and differently than the House had done it. On line 123 is No Child Left Inside grant program for $400,000 of one-time money. And then there's also some heritage enhancement money I'll show shortly. And then line 124 through 129 are some Senate provisions that were included out of the general fund for Lanes Road Dam, Blue Earth County Stormwater, the Delia Floodplain Modeling, Waterville Flood Gauge, Waterville Cannon River Dam System Study, and then the Bruce Mine Park and Mesabi Trailhead. In total, from the general fund, the DNR is receiving $25.766 million in the new money. Going down to line 135 is starting out of the Natural Resources Fund. There's $1 million for advancing DNR forest inventory out of the FMIA account. The next provision would be, again, 138, 139, where the state park fee increases that were not included in the bill. There is on 141 is the increase from the LACON appropriation. There's some additional money in that account that is included at just under $3 million. On lines 142 and 143 are cost recovery program for grants at DNR from the lottery in lieu account. 144 was the increase in watercraft registration fees. So those are also not included in the bill. There are no watercraft or AIS fee increases in the bill. On 145 and 146 are increases from the non-game wildlife account. It's $330,000 in the current biennium, and then $15,000 per year in the tails. On 147 is, let's see here. The 147, 148, 149, these were how the House was spending the new AIS fee increases they had in the bill, but they're not included in this bill. There is on 151 electric assisted bicycle modification, there's $20,000 from the state parks account for new signage related to that. On 152 is a state parks lottery in lieu account increase, and it's $550,000 per year from balances that are accruing in that account, and you'll see that for a few lottery in lieu accounts. On line 153 is a grant for Voyager Country ATV trail system for $950,000. There is a grant for Prospector Loop Trail at $955,000. There's an increase to the ATV grant and aid program of $300,000 per year out of the ATV account. And then there's a $250,000 one-time appropriation for a statewide ATV master plan. And 157 would be the local trails grants lottery in lieu appropriation. Again, from a balance that's accruing in that account of $250,000 per year. Lines 159 and 160, this is a change from a direct to a statutory appropriation, the cross-country ski account. On line 161, there's the zoo grants lottery in lieu increase. These would be for the Como Zoo and the Duluth Zoo, and then under the Minnesota Zoo, you'll see an increase as well. That's it for the Natural Resources Fund. Starting on 166 is the Game and Fish Fund changes. You'll see a set of four changes here out of the Heritage Enhancement account. There's $1.5 million for Sustaining Minnesota Deer from CWD. There's $1 million for shade tree grants to cities to address EAB. There's $500,000 for No Child Left Inside program in addition to the general fund mentioned above. And then there's $400,000 for shooting sports facility grants. The next change you'll see would be the governor's proposal for using the RIM account for the balances that have accrued there. And then there's additional money for promotion of the critical habitat license plates. The only other change for DNR for appropriations would be on line 190, the Office of the School Trust Lands. This would be for accelerated land exchanges for $1 million in the current biennium and then $400,000 in the tails. You'll see on line 192 and below that are the revenue changes. Most of these are kind of minor technical for open access for tribal members on state park lands. There's a little lost revenue from the general fund and from the state parks account. There's a permit fee violation of $40,000 per year. There's the lands bill has a little revenue of $34,000. You'll see line 206 or 209 are revenue losses related to the timber permit extensions. And then line 210 through 212 are the DUI uniformity revenue changes. And then there's small changes for permits for youth fishing tournaments and for boat fishing tournaments. In total, from all funds and all direct statutory open, DNR will be receiving $955 million. The next spot there'll be changes would be on the Board of Water and Soil Resources, starting on line 238. There are four general fund changes here. There's climate mitigation, soil health via agricultural cover crops at $1.35 million for the current biennium and then $203,000 per year in the tails. On line 141 is climate adaptation, water storage and treatment for $2 million of one-time money. On line 243 or 242, the House had lawns to legumes in here. It's not funded in this portion of the bill at all. It's just funded in the Environment and Natural Resources Trust Fund portion. You'll see on line 243, a Senate provision for septic replacement grants that's included at $1.4 million. And then on line 246 is the operating adjustment of just under $300,000. In total, the Board of Water and Soil Resources receives $34.785 million from the general fund, $5 million of which is new. The Conservation Corps receives their base funding. The Metropolitan Council Parks receives an increase from the lottery in lieu account of $850,000 per year. The zoo was carried in the governor's, as part of the global agreement, I think the governor's funding some of the zoos, restoring the zoo's economic engine. However, we did pick up the tails increase here of $458,000 per year. And then you also see under the zoo $140,000 one time from the lottery in lieu account. The next change would be on Explore Minnesota Tourism on line 308. There's the operating adjustment on 310 of just of $269,000. And then on line 312, there's community event grants for $1 million. And then the only other change I mentioned above was the MLCAT repayment. You'll see it down on line 327. It's $100,000 per year from the general fund being transferred in there. So in total, this portion of the bill spends $365,488,000, which is $33.5 million above base. All funding sources, it's just over $100 million of new increases. Some of those are a statutory or continuation of the Petro Fund and things like that. The bill also picked up the conservation officer salary increases. These are the changes related to that. There was the bill, the spreadsheet that was posted, I'll update the posting, was missing the column total right here and right here. So this number is slightly wrong, but this is correct in what I'm showing you now. The posted version is a lower number, but those are also included. That brings the total general fund spending to $367,079,000, which is $35,091,000 above base. Mr. Chair, that's it for the main portion of the bill. I can quickly do the trust fund articles if you'd like, or I don't know if you want to go to Ms. Taylor next or how you'd like to handle it.
You can do the trust fund quickly, Mr. Chair.
Sure. Starting with the 2020 Environment and Natural Resources Trust Fund bill, this is the one that had the most work related to it. In the end, there are a couple changes. There's a reduction to the Teach Science Schools of STEM Living Laboratories. The House had 368, the agreement's at 250, which was the tentative rec anyways. And then there's a new appropriation of that same amount of $118,000 for lawns to legumes. Otherwise, the bill, the main portion of the bill is how the House had passed it, spending $61.387 million. There are also some appropriations that would otherwise cancel that we can transfer to other things. So you can see there is the Sauk River Dam replacement. We had this in the bill previously that the House passed. It's now being used to fund the unprecedented change threatens Minnesota pristine lakes at $482,000. And then there is $700,000 included for wastewater pond optimization, $700,000 for mineral and water research at NRRI. There's $500,000 for chloride pollution reduction. There's $336,000 for chronic wasting disease prion research in soils. And then there is $880,000 for the lawns to legumes program included here, so just under $1 million total. And that comes from transfer of a couple other appropriations, this Minnesota Point Pine Forest, and then this developing RNA interference to control zebra mussels. These weren't being used or able to fully be used. So that's $880,000. And then there are some other smaller appropriations that would otherwise cancel that are being transferred into an emerging issues account at $284,000. And then switching to the 2021 Environment and Natural Resources Trust Fund for fiscal years 22, this bill is how it passed the House. It appropriates $70.881 million. And then there's, and again, $840,000 of appropriations that would have otherwise canceled that are going to forest health research development demonstration at NRRI. And Mr. Chair, that's all I have for the spreadsheet changes.
Thank you, Ms. Taylor.
Mr. Chair and members, I'm going to walk through the policy language, and what I'm going to do is just point out the differences from this document, the first engrossment, versus what passed the House originally. I'm going to start on Article 2, which is on page 51. That's where it begins. But the actual first change I want to point out is on page 59. It's section 16. If you turn the page, you'll see towards the top, this is the first of the CWD compromise provisions. The language on lines 4 and 5 would allow the DNR to inspect farmed white-tailed deer according to some new concurrent authority. And that's in the next section on that page, section 17, which states that the DNR and the Board of Animal Health possess concurrent authority to regulate farmed white-tailed deer under certain sections of Chapter 35. I will note that the Senate last night passed some additional language that reiterates that that authority is only for those sections, as well as requiring some reporting. But that is not included in this first engrossment here. The next section I want to point out is on page 62. It's section 21. This is a section picked up from the Senate that allows the DNR to convey easements on state lands. The next section is on page 65. Section 26 is the first of a couple sections on the critical habitat private sector matching account. The Senate proposal prevailed. And it is similar to what the governor had originally provided. It would allow the use of bond proceeds to be used towards the match. It has the 2-to-1 matching increase that the House had had. And then section 27 is some additional critical habitat language. They would allow the use of the revenues for restoration and enhancement as well as acquisition. And then on the bottom of page 66, you'll see some additional language specifying how the non-game wildlife management account may be used, including restricting the use to no more than 30% for monitoring and evaluation activities. The next section that's different would be on page 67, at the top of the page, section 28. This is a technical section related to the critical habitat plate stuff. And then on page 74 is the next one I'll point out. Section 48 on that page, this is picked up from the Senate and would allow the DNR to lease state lands for purposes of investigating, analyzing, and developing conservation easements that provide ecosystem service benefits. And then on page 75 is the first of several sections that were picked up from the Senate that the governor proposed. And this was proposing the codification of 4 different fees that they had been charging. Sections 50 and 51 are technical related to that. And then section 52 on page 76 is the first fee. This is the walk-in access fee at $3. On the bottom of that page, section 54, you'll remember the Senate had the original language the DNR proposed. The House had language that limited it to the native snakes, lizards, and salamanders, and then also had some language related to the threatened endangered species that has been dropped. And this is the original DNR proposal. On page 77, this is another section picked up from the Senate. This is establishing the 5-year hunting license revocation for those that are convicted of certain violations like trespassing. And that's if you're convicted while possessing night vision equipment. The next section I wanted to point out is on page 78, section 57. This is another one of those codification of the fees. On lines 20 and 21, you'll see the light geese and sandhill crane fees are being established for resident hunting. And then the next section, section 58 on 79, is doing the same for non-residents. If you go to the bottom of page 80, section 59 and 60 are new. These are just technical related to those new fees being put in statute. And then section 63 on 82 is the, the apprentice hunter validation fee that's being established. Section 64 is another new one picked up from the Senate, banning the use of crossbows during the muzzleloader season. Section 65 is another section picked up from the Senate. This is prohibiting somebody from shooting decoys placed by peace officers from a motor vehicle. Section 66 on the top of 83 is another section picked up from the Senate. It would clarify that night vision enhanced with infrared illuminator is included in the exception for using night vision equipment. And also, if you look on lines 21 and 22, there's language prohibiting the use of night vision equipment during the regular firearm season by those hunting coyote and fox. Sections 67 and 68 are more technical sections related to the addition of those fees. And then if you go to page 87, there's another new section. On the top of that page, section 74, this is a compromise worked out on the GAR provisions the House would carry. If you remember, the House had language making GAR a rough, or I'm changing it from a rough fish to a game fish. The compromise here would require the DNR to annually establish daily and possession limits, but they would still remain a rough fish. The next two sections on the page are related to the turtle taking. These are the provisions the DNR had originally proposed and that were carried by the Senate. The turtle position of the House was not included. If you want to skip ahead to page 92, some more sections that were picked up from the Senate. This is section 83, which would require the DNR to notify local governments when establishing an ordinary high water level. And then the next section would establish a process for local governments to appeal those decisions. The next section I want to point out is on page 100. Section 91, this is a modified version of what the House was carrying regarding solid waste reporting. This is removing a report requirement. This was worked out with the agency and stakeholders. The next section I want to point out would be on page 105. The top of that page, section 97, this is the closed landfill investment fund changes. You'll see the statutory appropriation of the 4.5 in paragraph B there. And then the emergency appropriation of the 9 million is paragraph C, and then paragraph D is the sunset of 4 years that Mr. Hagermeyer had mentioned. The next section is on 106. This is the feedlot permit section. If you go to the bottom of page 107, you'll see the new language that would prohibit the PCA from requiring feedlot permits to implementing nitrogen best management practices as a condition of allowing the application of manure in October. And then if you move to the 109, you'll see there's a conditional effective date for this section that states that it's effective August 31st of 2021, unless the EPA disapprove of the changes. The next section I want to point out would be section 102 on the starting on the bottom of 111. This is related to the school trust lands director. This is establishing a new requirement of the 10-year strategic plan and framework that the director would put together. It would require advanced strategies on school trust lands that capitalize on ecosystem service markets. The next section is section 104. On page 113, it would remove some requirements of applicants of the SFIA program to provide certain information that the DNR already has. On the bottom of page 114 is section 105. This is the House's food packaging ban for PFAFs. The only change from what the House had originally passed is a date change. It was moved to January 1st, 2025 for the effective date. There were some changes last night adopted in the Senate that would move this back to 2024, and then also establish some definition of intentionally added, and then limit the prohibition to PFAS that have been intentionally added. The next section I would point out is on 117. This is section 108. It extends a date requirement of the EQB. It's a report for assuming section 404 permitting. The next section is on the top of 119, section 109. This is making a technical correction to a previous law that governs the application of stormwater requirements. This was in the Senate and picked up here. The next section is on page 146. Section 124, this is modified from what the House and Senate had carried to address some concerns MMB had that it should have been in the bonding bill. So this is back to the language as it was originally proposed in the bill. And then there was a citation removed to get rid of that concern. Section 125 is a Senate section that was picked up here. This would allow St. Louis County to convey non-conforming property under certain conditions. And then the next section would be on 148. On the bottom of that page, section 128, this is the timber permit section. There were some technical changes, and I just wanted to point out that there some dates were changed. This would allow those permits that had expired between January 1st, 2021 and June 30th, 2021 to also be eligible if they meet the requirements. Section, or on page 150, there's two more sections I wanted to point out. Section 129 is some modified language from what the Senate was carrying. This exempts a engineered wood product facility in Itasca County from EIS requirements based solely on the mandatory categories. They would still need to have the relevant environmental permits. And then there's some additional wetland mitigation requirements that would be established under the section as well. Section 130 is another section picked up from the Senate. This requires the DNR to wait at least 2 years before terminating some environmental permits related to a terminated permit to mine. The next section I want to point out is on page 151, section 133. This is another section related to the feedlot permits. It would require the PCA to amend general and individual permits to reflect the change. And it does, again, have that conditional effect like the other section. Section 134 is the repealer. All the repealers in the bill were originally in the House bill. There were some that were not included, and that was the petrol sunset repeal that's being carried in the energy bill. There was a PCA reporting requirement that is not included. And then the related turtle sellers repealers are not included. And then there was a section or a repealer related to the dry cleaner fees that was not included. On the bottom of that page, which is 151, is Article 3. This is the DUI uniformity. There are no changes to this section or this article, so we can skip ahead to page 157. And this is Article 4. This is the law enforcement salary article. I'll just point out this is the new language that was worked out, and it does include a technical fix to account for some recent contract negotiations. So this should be the new language, and it's similar to the language being carried in other bills. Then we can skip ahead to Articles 5 and 6. These are the LCCMR articles. There really aren't any language changes that aren't reflected in the spreadsheet, except for the background check language. There was just a change to narrow the application of that language to those who are actually working with the children and being funded by the trust fund. And if you want to see the language, it's on page 194 and 243. It's the same in both articles. And that concludes the language changes. There were a number of health sections that were not included in the bill that I can quickly run through, Mr. Chair, unless you want to get moving to questions.
Ms. Taylor, it looks like we've got about 8 questions, so I think we may want to go to that, but suffice it to say, there are a lot of House provisions that were not included. And I would state again, this was extremely difficult negotiating. I think we'll go to the questions, and then maybe if there's time, we'll circle back to that. But I think members have a lot of questions. So Representative Keeler.
Thank you. So my question is more about the Science Museum. I know that was something we had a pretty robust conversation about, and I know that when we had connected before, there was some opportunities around federal money, or I didn't hear it in any of the recap today. Can you hit on that a little bit?
I think that's a very positive part of these negotiations, is that we were able to get a commitment that there will be federal money going to the Science Museum and for timber relief. Mr. Hagemeyer, it doesn't show up on the spreadsheet because it's not coming into our budget and going out. But maybe Mr. Hagemeyer, if you could just validate the amounts.
Mr. Chair, based on those discussions, the amount that was talked about for the timber permits was $1 million. The House was carrying $1,075,000, so that's why there's now $75,000 in the bill. And then I believe the amount discussed for the Science Museum was the change that the House had of $3.768 million or something like that. $3.7 million or $3.8 million roughly for the Science Museum.
$3.798 million, I think.
That sounds correct, Mr. Chair.
Very positive that those funds are there, and that's your bill. That was what was included and presented, and the governor will be allocating the federal dollars to that. And that would not have happened without your work. So congratulations. And congratulations, Representative Eklund. The timber relief money would not have been there without your work and commitment on that. Representative Wozlawick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm wondering if maybe someone from DNR can talk a little bit about what the shared authority means in practice. So I don't really have a great understanding of sort of what that all encompasses. So if someone can jump up and talk a little bit about what does that mean in terms of what the DNR can actually do, as opposed to sort of compared to what authority they have now versus what this concurrent authority will allow them to do in the bill.
Is Commissioner Stroman on?
I am here, Mr. Chair.
Welcome, Commissioner. If you could introduce yourself for the record, and you did hear the question.
I did hear the question. Thank you, Mr. Chair, for the record. My name is Sarah Stroman. I'm the Commissioner of the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources. And I'm going to start this one. I am going to ask Assistant Commissioner Bob Meyer, who's also on here, to talk a little bit specifically about the plan that we have for the transition. But essentially, with the concurrent authority, what this does is change from the situation we have now, where the majority of the authority is granted to the Board of Animal Health. The authority for farm servants is granted to the Board of Animal Health under Chapter 35. The DNR has some very specific roles within that chapter related to escapes, related to investigation. But so what this change does by giving us concurrent authority is it essentially gives us the same authorities that the Board of Animal Health has under Chapter 35. So where if you read the statute where it says the board, you can now say the board and the Department of Natural Resources. And so the goal of this really, I think, is as this committee has discussed, is to more proactively address the issues of chronic wasting disease in farm servants and to go into more of a preventative response than or a more preventative mode than simply responding once there is a case. And so how I've kind of talked about this is really, I think after the Beltrami County situation, it's been very clear that there is a systemic failure. And that is because when only the Board of Animal Health has the authority and they go in and they do their inspections, their perspective is as veterinarians, as animal health experts for those animals inside the fence only. Obviously, we know that each of these farms, particularly when there is an exposure to chronic wasting disease inside that fence, there is also a risk to deer outside the fence or wild deer. And this is very evident in Beltrami County, where there's actually, carcasses dumped outside of the facility on county managed land. So the view that the department brings, and this is why it's really important that we have this concurrent authority, is to look at those facilities during the inspections with the perspective of what's the potential risk to wild deer outside the fence, not just looking at the health and of those animals inside the fence, but really looking outside. And I think what we've seen is, we've kind of talked for a long time about Board of Animal Health manages inside the fence, DNR manages outside the fence. And really there's this place where those come together, and there's been a systemic failure and a gap in the authority. And so by overlapping here, we'll bring both of those perspectives in. And the goal then is to take the existing memorandum of understanding that we have with the Board of Animal Health that spells out how we work together in those places where we already have some joint roles, and modify that for concurrent authority. So maybe I'll just flip it to Assistant Commissioner Meyer to quickly talk about kind of what we plan to do in the first year, practically how that works, if that's okay, Mr. Chair.
Yes, Commissioner Meyer.
Mr. Chairman, members, for the record, Bob Meyer, Assistant Commissioner, Department of Natural Resources. As you see in the spreadsheet, it's a phased in appropriation, $1.25 million the first year, then 2.25 years after that. Our plan is to work with the board and conduct a white-tailed deer herd inspection update, go through, try to get to every farm that's out there with the board jointly, do an inspection, kind of situational awareness, take notes of operational activities, what's going on, and identify areas of improvement and work together with the board and the producers to install or implement those improvements. Commissioner did a great job of talking about where we are currently with the Board of Animal Health. But for one example is making sure that producers aren't feeding deer on the fence line to attract wild deer in, causing nose-to-nose contact would be one best management practice we'd like to implement with those farms. So those types of things that we'll do, and then we will come back next session, update the legislature on our activities and move towards a fully implemented program with the inspections, enforcements, activities with the DNR and the Board of Animal Health.
Representative Lawler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a quick follow-up question. With the concurrent authority, what would happen in a case where the DNR and the Board of Animal Health didn't agree on something? Is there a process that's in place or will be in place? I'm concerned that if there's a disagreement, what's going to come out of that, and how do we solve that?
Commissioner Strelman.
Yeah, Mr. Chair and Representative, I think that's a perfect question, and that's really the intent of the update to the Memorandum of Understanding is to specify that. I mean, I think obviously the hope is there aren't that many times where we disagree on a course of action, but again, because we're bringing different perspectives, that maybe, there could be those situations, and those would be the kinds of things that would be spelled out in that memorandum of understanding specifically as what's the procedure in that case and how do we reach resolution or who prevails, right?
Representative Lawler.
That's it. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Akam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I will just say that this is the Environment and Natural Resources Committee, and in Minnesota, we have symbols that really represent our state, from the loon and the walleye and the red pine. And we, as our climate continues to change, we are threatened to lose them. And that's not what any of us wants. We, in Minnesota, we value our environment and we want to protect it. And because our climate is changing in Minnesota even more than other states in our country, I find it really concerning that climate change is not more prevalent in this bill, and that my constituents who are asking us to be working on climate change, and yet our agencies are not willing to put forward that work. I appreciate that PCA has some money to go towards resiliency and adaptation, and there's some funds that are being put toward natural carbon sequestration. But we can't continue to bury our head in the sand and ignore the issue of climate change. It isn't going to go away. And so what I'd like to hear from the agencies, or maybe from the chair, how do I give my constituents the reassurance that they deserve and that they expect that we're focusing on this important issue of climate change?
Thank you, Representative Akam. I'll take a crack at it first, and then I think Commissioner Bishop is here as well as Commissioner Stroman. You will notice that the word climate or climate change is not included in the bill at all, or very rarely, and that's because the Republican Senate refused to acknowledge the word climate change and demanded that it be removed from all of the appropriations. We were unable on some of the forestry provisions that Representative Lippert had we were able to get those sections that said carbon sequestration, but we were unable to have accepted those sections that said climate change. Your aquatic invasive species plan update that what the purpose of the update was to include climate change, they would not accept that because it said climate change. It is 2021. And we still have even disagreement on language and the inability for ideology to accept that climate change is occurring. And so therefore, we have the bill that we have in front of us. And if the commissioners could maybe describe their efforts on implementation for combating climate change and developing resiliency. Since Commissioner Stroman is already gone, maybe Commissioner Bishop is available.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Laura Bishop from the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. And thank you, Representative Akam, for your questions and also expressing the urgency that we all feel in the administration. So I think that you're right. There was overall a number of the recommendations from the governor's climate subcabinet are included in this bill from Bowser, DNR, and MPCA, and not all at the funding levels that the governor requested, but many of them at maybe two-thirds of the funding level that the governor had requested. So you'll see that the names of the items might be different. The climate resiliency and adaptation grant program that will be administered by the MPCA is now called local water infrastructure assistance, which is what it is. Being more, defining more about what the actual program will be was helpful to many of the members of the Senate. So we decided that that was a group to do this. And I think that, you know, one thing to note is that overall there was a very large and discussion about the governor's clean car standards. And that is a central part of the governor's climate agenda, and that delay that had been pushed by the Senate was traded so that they weren't going to ask for a delay any longer and that that could move forward. So I think that, you know, as part of this, that was an undercurrent through the whole dialogue and whole discussion was about the governor's climate agenda and clean cars, and we're excited that that implementation will begin moving forward. Thank you.
Commissioner Stroman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, Sarah Stroman, Commissioner of the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources. And I think Commissioner Bishop did an excellent job of talking about the governor's climate agenda and how that fared in this bill and how agencies are working together to implement that agenda. I think just what I would add from the DNR's perspective is that when you look at our strategic priorities for this administration, climate is very much on that list. It's very prominent in the work that we are doing. And Representative Akam, to your proposal and the language that you propose to add into the AIS plans, what I would say to that is that we will plan to incorporate climate issues into those aquatic invasive species management plans. Despite the fact that the language wasn't included in the bill, I think, you know, what our approach is recognizing that managing our lands and waters in the state of Minnesota requires us thinking about climate change and making sure that our management of those resources is appropriate as the climate changes, both, you know, to promote resilience, to mitigate and to adapt when necessary. So, you know, even though the language did not make it into the bill, it is our intent to incorporate climate into that report.
Representative Akam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I appreciate the comments from the commissioners. And I will just say, Commissioner Stroman, saying that you're going to include that in your plans is one thing, and including the language in the plan is another. I think that my constituents want accountability, and they want to know that our agencies recognize this as an issue. And so you may be doing the work, and I think it would be important to also have that included in the plans so that our constituents and the residents of Minnesota can see it. So thank you.
Representative Heintzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I did have a question relating to the huge failure, I think it was described as, in Beltrami. I was just reading, it was a BAH inspection that revealed illegal carcass disposal, and I was wondering what the huge failure was exactly, if we've identified that, and if I could get some more info on that, it would be helpful.
Commissioner Stroman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Heintzman. I'm going to ask actually Commissioner Meyer to talk a little bit more. He's been more involved. I think part of that investigation is still ongoing to learn exactly what happened there. But I think it's fair to say that given the time frame over which it appears the carcasses were dumped, I mean, they weren't just dumped, you know, in the last few weeks or the last few months. That there was some reason in those inspections that carcass disposal was not being followed up on. And again, I'm not sure we know exactly why, if it's that's difference in perspective and where the risk is, but I'll let Commissioner Meyer provide any more specifics he may have.
Commissioner Meyer.
Sorry, Mr. Chairman. Bob Meyer, Assistant Commissioner, DNR. Representative Heintzman, that particular example and case is what the future, I think, will look like. The board and the DNR have been working cooperatively hand in hand on that investigation. We were there at the very beginning. We worked together to identify and found the dump site through conversations with the landowner and the farm owner. So working with the board congruently or jointly, I should say, is exactly what transpired there. That issue is still ongoing. We've recently received access to that county property through the private landowner's property, and we are beginning to fence the area, put up the fencing. Unfortunately, the land is within a wetland, so we will be putting up a temporary fence until we can get in there in the fall or in the wintertime, most likely, to avoid doing any damage to the actual area. And Mr. Representative Heintzman, I'm not sure if that answers your specific question, but it is an ongoing situation that we're actively working hand in hand with the board on.
Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Chair. No, so earlier, as we're getting the walkthrough, there was a provision that was discussed, and I wanted to talk about it just briefly, if we could. The provision, I think, specifically brought up by Ms. Taylor was in reference to DNR authority and this cooperative change between Board of Animal Health and DNR that would allow DNR to access deer farms. And it's long been held, and maybe some have disagreed, but statutorily it does appear that DNR currently has access to those farms. Maybe this language is a clarification that could help to move that relationship in the right direction and make sure that the language is clear enough that the agencies move forward in that effort of cooperation. So if there could be some help for members, myself specifically, to know kind of what we're talking about here, since it was argued, I thought, convincingly that DNR did previously have access to deer farms. So what's different in this language?
Mr. Chairman,
Mr. Meyer.
Mr. Chairman, members, Bob Meyer, Assistant Commissioner DNR. This language provides explicit authority that we can be present and work on these investigations and enforcements. Previously, the language said we may be at the request of the board. And the way that that was interpreted, that if a producer did not want the DNR on their property, the board would not allow us to. There was language in the House bill as it came off the floor that clarified that position, that said the DNR is allowed to be involved. This gives us the co-management authority. It gives us the same authority that the Board of Animal Health has for these activities. And as Commissioner Stroman stated, we'll be preparing an MOU or updating our MOU with the board and clearly identifying our roles and responsibilities with each other. So the board will still be involved. For example, we'll most likely be doing the fence inspections, which is critical to make sure that these facilities have well-maintained fences. The board will be most likely working on registrations and transfer and movement activities. We'll work with them together on that. This really streamlines the activities. It keeps the Board of Animal Health with us working on the health and safety of these animals, but it also gives them, it'll give them a little bandwidth to continue to focus on their priority of making sure that our domesticated livestock are safe and healthy for the production and well-being of everyone in the country. So we'll be working on these things. We plan to have conversations with the legislature. We aren't going to do this in a silo by any means. We'll be working with the chairs of both environment and agricultural committees as these activities progress. And we look forward to creating a very well-run system to avoiding any duplication.
Mr. Chair, comment?
Representative Heinzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just, it sounds like there's still some question marks, but I would just like to thank you for your work negotiating this. I think coming out of the House, our position was pretty aggressive and a cooperative effort to work on a very serious issue, CWD, working with the strengths of DNR and the strengths of the Board of Animal Health could be a great option. So I just want to thank you for that, Mr. Chair, and eagerly anticipate hearing more about how this would work and some of the impacts that it may have going forward. So just wanted to mention that.
Just to follow up, Commissioner Stroman, it's my understanding that the Senate Council had provided a memo that the governor had the authority to transfer responsibilities under his gubernatorial powers. I have not seen that memo. Is the DNR in possession of that memo?
Mr. Chair, I am not in possession of that memo, nor have I seen it.
And I know that Representative Becker Finn has a conflict, so I would like Representative Jordan, if I could get Representative Becker Finn in quickly right before you, if that's okay.
Of course, Mr. Chair.
Representative Becker Finn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I want to get back to what the original question was about what the failure was. And the failure is that under the authority of the Board of Animal Health being the lead on controlling disease in livestock, and in this case it includes white-tailed deer, the Beltrami County situation would not have happened but for the lack of controlling the spread of the disease. And we have known about this disease. If you look at the chart of how the disease spread from farm to farm to farm to farm, it's incredible that we allowed this to happen and we allowed it to spread to a part of the state that thus far has not been impacted by chronic wasting disease. And now, because of that movement of deer from farm to farm to farm, we now have chronic wasting disease in the heart of northern Minnesota deer hunting country. And not only does that impact that local economy, but that impacts all of us throughout the state. There are licensed deer hunters in every single part of the state, and many of us travel to places like northern Minnesota, the Bemidji, Red Lake, Leech Lake area, Brainerd area to hunt. And now there are additional things that we all need to be concerned about. And now, you know, more deer in the herd are at risk because of this. So the dumping of the carcasses was just sort of the icing on the cake of the failure to oversee what happens at these facilities as it relates to the impact on the wild deer herd. So I think that's really important to note. Frankly, it's baffling to me why the Senate could not get on board with more of the policy provisions we had brought forward on chronic wasting disease. The public is overwhelmingly behind us on this, but for some reason, it's just baffling to me why we didn't do this sooner and why we don't just give it to the DNR. These provisions, I think it's important for the public to know, are limited to white-tailed deer. And that's because white-tailed deer are the same species on one side of the fence as the other side of the fence. So this is very different from any other type of animal that we raise as livestock. So this is an important step. I wish we would have gone further. We probably will need to go further, and we are only in the middle of this crisis. This isn't the end of dealing with this disease, and I'm glad we were able to make some steps this year, but disappointed we couldn't go further faster to really try to slow this down. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Commissioner Stroman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Becker-Finn. Yeah, I mean, I think you know, this is a situation where we need all tools available. And this has been a very serious disease for a long time. We've known about it, and I think we've continued to keep ourselves in response mode instead of prevention mode. So I think the goal here is to make, you know, what is not maybe a small step. I don't disagree that there were other steps we could have made, but it does, I think, ensure that we can apply DNR's expertise to this situation, you know, take a look, come back with further recommendations of what else needs to be done to ensure we stay in that preventive mode versus just a response mode. We cannot continue to keep chasing CWD around the state, but never catch up and get ahead of it and prevent it. So that's really the goal that at the DNR we're aiming for.
Representative Jordan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you for all the work you did on this and to all the other working group committee members. I am sensing a theme because I'm going to ask about, we did an incredible amount of environmental justice work. You know, when I met with the MPCA, they told me that was one of their top priorities for the year, but I'm seeing most of our environmental justice pieces are missing from this bill. So I'm curious about where those went. I'm really concerned about the lack of the community impacts not being included in the final bill. I'm also just, you know, I hear from community all the time that there's no way to hold corporate polluters responsible for the harm that they're doing to our lungs and to our health and to our environment. So I'm just wondering how we're supposed to hold these polluters accountable when this is the bill. And it's hard to hear these words that we care about environmental justice when this is the end product, with a real lack of environmental justice work being done. So I don't know, Mr. Chair, if you can comment, and perhaps Commissioner Bishop can also comment about where all the work that especially Representative Lee did on environmental justice, where that went and how we're supposed to move forward with this end product.
Representative Jordan, just like climate change, the Senate Republicans refused to have anything with the words environmental justice included. It's 2021, and they would not have anything that talked about environmental justice. I think Commissioner Bishop could highlight some of the challenges we had.
Mr. Chair and Representative Jordan, thank you so much for raising that and asking that. Representative Hansen said is correct. We had a number of policy provisions as well as budget provisions that would have moved forward, and unfortunately those were not funded. We did get money for one of the air equipments, but even on, you know, the legislative auditor recommendations for additional FTEs,
that can help on enforcement to avoid a water gremlin situation and compliance, of course, those did not get funded. It's unfortunate. What I will say about the cumulative impacts, the community engagement, those are all things that we wanted and wanted to look at how we could do more going forward. And one thing that we've been also doing is that we do have policies in place at the agency that look at environmental justice when we're doing our permitting or our cleanups and other things to prioritize those things. We tried to get much of that in statute so that, you know, that would be the process, both to continue to hold the MPCA accountable when I'm not here, and also to give us that authority through, from the legislature. We will continue forward with our policies. We have kind of a commissioner's order that we would do for the larger agency that really directs the directors to do this. But the provisions about opening our permits, reopening our permits, or a cease notification for serial offenders, that did not go forward, and that is statutory authority that I would need to be able to, you know, take those actions which the community is requesting. And so that becomes, you know, very hard to do, and it's unfortunate that those weren't there. I'd say the other piece, though, that, you know, the work on PFAS, especially with our water monitoring and the pilot inventory that we'll be doing, you know, those really get at sources that are causing maybe the pollution and the fish tissue issues that, you know, can get at some of the pieces that where they make these, the fish, you know, inedible and dangerous for populations that have subsistence fishing. And we want to make certain that, you know, those kind of pieces that we'll be continuing to look at through PFAS. And so I'd say that, you know, that's a advantage of what we've seen as well. And then, of course, our air quality hopefully will continue to improve, especially as we put more electric vehicles on the road, so that could be benefits for our EJ populations as well. But you're right, it didn't go very far at this bill. And we're sorry about that. You have a commitment for us to continue to work on this.
Representative Jordan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate that commitment, but our communities cannot wait more years. Our communities, where we have predominantly people of color, people who breathe air that is not up to the same standard that white communities have, our communities are dying at earlier ages. Children are missing school because they have asthma. I have asthma, and there are times when the air quality is bad if they're, and I live very close to a lot of serial polluters just across the river. So does Representative Lee. And I appreciate the commitment, but people need to know that environmental racism is real and it's having impacts on our health, and people are dying as a result of this. And we cannot continue to wait and kick this can down the road. So I hope everyone listening, which I don't know how many people there are out there listening, but this is real. This is a real problem, and we can't continue to wait on this. So thank you for your work this year, and it is really disappointing that it didn't go anywhere.
Representative Louis.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just a general comment. This bill is getting a lot better, I'll put it that way. It's pretty clear that the Senate was able to put some common sense into this, and so we'll see where, you know, where it goes once we get it to the floor. But I'll say I'm mildly impressed with what the Senate's done here. They've certainly cleaned this up quite a bit. But I have a question for Commissioner Bishop, and it relates to something that's kind of goes right back to that quote systemic word that floats around here periodically by both commissioners. And this is a little bit new, and maybe it hasn't reached your level yet, Commissioner Bishop. But I'm seeing some issues out there with our septic inspector folks. And, you know, the independent septic systems that all of us in rural Minnesota are blessed with. We don't have, we can't call city water and sewer. We have to maintain our own. But here's a situation, and I hope you're aware of this. I've had, I know Assistant Commissioner Gauthier has been helping gathering the information, but last year we only did a couple of training sessions for the septic system design and soil analysis that's part of that certification process. We only did two in 2020. There was an abysmal failure rate there. About half the students failed. And now we're plowed into 2021 trying to catch up, because that's an integral part of people maintaining their septic systems. We see that horrific failure rate. And for those of you that don't understand, it's a sort of a joint effort. The University of Minnesota, they use their instructors to teach this. And then I believe the MPCA directly deals with the testing element of it. And I guess I'll just say this, you know, we got all this, I'll say, ideological, you know, we're out there trying to operate at the 60,000 foot level. Well, this is another example. We got inspections stacking up out there because there's not enough qualified inspectors. And when you have half of the people in the class fail, it's real easy to make the assumption that all the students were idiots. And I won't make that assumption, because these are professionals, and that's part of their job is making sure those septic systems work. There's something wrong with your system. And obviously when it's, you know, two-part system, you test, another group trains. But I tell you, I hope you're aware of this, and I hope you've got some answers on how you're going to fix that, because we can't maintain a decent environment out there unless MPCA, again, gets focused on the day-to-day job, and that is you got the responsibility to certify those people. So what's going with this? Half of the students fail. And this isn't it. This isn't just a one time. You can go back and look at the last 2 year data. I mean, it's, I mean, it looks like some of our worst public schools and high school graduation rates. And there no, I just don't understand it. So hopefully, if you're not aware of it, I don't mean to blindside you, but certainly I'm sure Assistant Commissioner out there can provide a little background, because we're just starting to look into this, but it's abysmal.
Thank you. So, Representative Lewick, thank you. We have 2 minutes left, so I want each of the folks who have questions to just ask the question, and then the agencies can follow up. So, Representative Eklund, then Representative Lippert, and then Representative Morrison.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm hoping that this is for Commissioner Stroman, that as soon as that agreement between the Board of Animal Health and the DNR is finalized, which I hope is soon, that you will share it with the relevant members of the committee, because in my view, the Board of Animal Health has been an abysmal failure in the spread of the chronic wasting disease. So I'm hoping that the co-agreement will make things work. Thank you, Mr. Chair and Commissioner.
Representative Lippert.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this question's for the PCA. So I have concerns about the lifting of restrictions for manure application in October. I'm hopeful the EPA will step in and overrule, but I'm wondering what it means for the regulating authority of the PCA going forward if the EPA has to step in this way, and just what sort of interaction is going to be happening between the state and federal level, and if the PCA has concerns here.
And Representative Morrison.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a brief comment. I want to thank Chair Hansen for your leadership. As a member of the Conference Committee, I have an acute sense of how difficult this negotiation was. As a newer member of this body, I was stunned that the Senate just didn't show up to public conference committee meetings. We need to commit as a body to reflect the will of the people of Minnesota to protect our environment and natural resources. We face multiple crises in our state, and due to the Senate's obstructionism and denial, this bill unfortunately does not reflect the urgency that we need to face them. Chronic wasting disease, emerald ash borer, aquatic invasive species, issues around environmental justice, climate change, and pollinator collapse. These are big deals, and this bill treats them either like they don't exist or they are a minor problem. That's my comment. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And thank you, members. The agencies, if they could respond to the questions or earlier questions, we will post those on the committee website. It's anticipated that this bill will be in before the House. It will be a Senate file, so there will be a couple of amendments that probably will be adopted that were adopted in the Senate. And then the bill, if approved, would go to the governor. Thank you all for your work. I can't say any more than Representative Morrison. Minnesota's challenges with the environment are not going to go away. And we are committed to continue working on them because we have to. We are adjourned.